Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Oh, I'm ready for a vacation. Fumbling the bag on snapshots. Messing up everything this morning, and it's only Wednesday. It's not even Friday. It feels like a Friday.
For you.
It's Friday for me, where you're going to have the dad show in back-to-back days. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
I like that you guys adopted that name for it, by the way, when the two of you were hosting together.
We have a lot of fun when you're gone.
The dad pod?
Hate to break it to you, Stacey.
No, I'm really upset, and I'm also really upset because if any huge news happens, I will be livid. The second I hear Michael Bumpus's voice
on a promo,
announcing any kind of big story, I'm going to be heated.
I'll save it and I'll send it to you if it goes down.
I'm so mad. I'm already so mad. I need to ask people to personally contact the Seahawks and Mariners and anyone else and say, don't do anything. Don't
hold off until Monday.
Don't make a trade. Don't sign anyone. Don't have any injuries. Don't even talk. You know what I mean? Sit still. Keep your hands to yourself.
I like it.
That's what I'm going to instruct. All right. It was a battle between two MVPs. Shohei Ohtani struck out Mike Trout in the top of the ninth in last night's WBC championship to seal the win for Japan. Japan takes home its third WBC victory. And what's really cool is, despite the loss for Team USA, it was the first time seeing Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani face off in a high-stakes moment. But these are the kinds of what-if scenarios that you talk about with your friends. Who would come out on top in this kind of scenario? And you finally saw it. It's why the biggest winners last night might have been baseball fans. Tell me, actually, before I get to this question, what did you think of the game? First reaction to the game.
First reaction was, this is lit. I felt the energy, right? Japan was represented in the stands. Of course, the U.S. was represented. And you could feel just the tension. But it was a different type of tension, right? It was it wasn't a World Series tension where it's the tension and it's stressful. It was a tension, but it was still fun. You had dudes playing the trumpet in the background. You got all these noisemakers. It was World Cup type of tension, man. So my first impression was these are the two best teams in this moment, and it's gonna come down to a moment. And that's what happened. And that's what we got. That's what we wanted. Didn't end up great for the U.S., but you understand why Japan was able to get this done. You look at their pitching is on point.
Yep.
Talent-wise, the U.S. got them, but it came down to pitching, and Japan's pitching was on point.
And speaking of Japan's pitching, here's Shohei Ohtani striking out Trout to clinch that WBC title for Japan.
Ohtani's ready. Trout's ready. 3-2. He struck him out! Ohtani strikes out Trout, and Japan's back on top of the baseball world.
Now, I mean, this is a genuine question. Was Team USA not able to pull it off because they didn't have as good or as deep a pitching as Japan did? Or were they not able to pull it off because Shohei Ohtani is an insanely talented person? This guy is just a monster.
Dude's ridiculous. There were several times. This is how good he is. He's in the dugout. I might have to pitch. Let me run down to the bullpen real quick and warm up. You know what I'm saying? All right, let me come back to the dugout with my teammates. It's the most expressions I've ever seen at Ohtani. You know, and the Japanese culture in general are very humble. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't show too much emotion. But in this moment, you knew how badly they wanted that. I mean, he tosses his hat,
cool.
The gloves up in the air. I was happy for Japan. Typically, I am bitter. The U.S. loses in anything. We can lose in a walking contest across the street.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be hot if the U.S. loses.
1,000%.
But I look at this, I go, they deserve this thing, man. I mean, I don't think the U.S. sent the right pitching staff to this tournament. And obviously, you have to have guys who want to do it. So maybe this motivates the pitchers who stayed home. I know Kershaw was supposed to be there, but he couldn't be insured. There's some weird stuff going on with that, Curtis. If you could tell me about the insured process of this, what's going on? Is it J-Lo back in the day when she got her backside insured? What's going on here?
Wait, J-Lo got her backside insured?
Yeah.
As she should.
I think Tina Turner's had her legs insured.
Tina Turner. Yeah. All-timer also.
One thing about Shohei Ohtani, his pregame speech, which was said in Japanese, so there's a translation of it, which I thought was really it's like, wow, like I can see why Japan came out and played the way they did last night. Ohtani said this. This is a translation of it. Says, let's stop admiring them. If you admire them, you can't surpass them. We came here to surpass them, to reach the top. For one day, let's throw away our admiration for them and just think about winning.
Because
American baseball is Major League Baseball is the gold standard of professional baseball in the world. And I think a lot of these guys have dreams of playing in Major League Baseball. And Shohei was able to be like, look, stop admiring them. Stop giving them credit. We're as good as they are. Let's go out there and show them we're good.
Yep.
And they did last night.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And I've got from the 360. It would be amazing if Japan's best player and USA's best player were on the same team. I bet that team would finish at least in fourth place. That's funny, 360. That's really funny. It was. I don't know about you guys. Curtis, I think your appreciation certainly predates mine. Bump, I'm curious about yours because you do love a lot of international competition. Like, you're a huge soccer fan, obviously watch World Cup regularly. I do not get as into international competition. Like, the Olympics, I'll casually watch. And that included the WBC, where it was like, I'll check it out. But even to begin this training camp, I talked about the WBC, like, okay, so when's Julio coming back? Like, how long are players going to be? I treated it as though it was an interruption in spring training. And right. It's like, okay, well, what are they risking with this? What's going on? And then I got so into it. And maybe I would have felt differently had it been in 2020 and had I had that one season, but like I didn't have the same appreciation in 2017 as I do now, and I wonder if that was the same for you, because I feel like it was the same for some baseball fans.
Yeah, 2017, I don't even remember the WBC, honestly. I know it was there. The U.S. won in 2017, correct?
Yeah, they did.
Didn't play in 2020. That big gap kind of messed it up for me. But when it started, I viewed the WBC as like an exhibition, you know, and I said, I'm going to peep. I'm going to check it out. I want to see Julio. I want to see Suarez. I was more invested in the Mariners in the tournament than, okay, USA, let's go get this. But then I watch one game and I go, oh, it's active in the stadium right now.
That's exactly what I did.
I'm like, okay, I feel this energy going on. The players made it important to me because I saw how important it was to the players. If these guys were going out there, going through the motions, not – an example, the Mexican cat who robbed the home run, who I couldn't believe he was Mexican. He's as black as me. And he snatches it. Then he stands there and like flexes on him and stuff. Like, that was the WBC for me. There's so much emotion going on. So once I saw the emotion out the players and how important it was to them, then the patriotism came out. I go, all right, USA. Let's go. It's
all
like I'm watching,
like, let's go.
You know, it's like when I watched the Mighty Ducks for the first time, their team USA. I'm like, okay, USA, let's go get it.
It was in D2, so I don't know what you're talking about. Very specifically, Mighty Ducks was against Team Iceland, okay? You know what? I was going to correct myself on the Mighty Ducks. I'm moving on. I'm staying with WBC. It was very, very cool. Curtis, I'm sure you already had a deep appreciation for the WBC. Like Bump, I got really into it specifically in this one, and it was like it almost caught me off guard. And you're right. You're completely right, Bump. It was so driven by the players, like me picking up on cues from the players being like, now I'm hyped. Now I'm excited. Yeah. Curtis, you having watched previously and gotten into previous WBCs, do you think this might have been the most important version of it yet?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, this one I think is going to launch the WBC into a stratosphere it's never been in before, because I think the first couple of them, it was just kind of like a gimmick. It was like, oh, look at these guys playing for their countries. I think, what was it, 2006 was the first one, 2009 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It never was as popular, I think, as it was this last go-around. And I think a lot of that had to do with the star power in this tournament. There were a lot of big names in this tournament. We talk about how Team USA's pitching staff wasn't, you know, up to snuff. But in their lineup last night, what, they had three straight MVPs in their lineup. So that was very impressive. And just you're seeing how much talent there is outside of the United States. You're seeing it, you know, across the globe now. And it's not just an American sport anymore. It's a global sport. And we talked to Jun Lee yesterday, and, you know, the way he's going to measure it is to see baseball take off in areas where it's, you know, not the biggest game in town.
Lots
like in
of
Europe.
European.
Yeah. Africa, you know, places like that. I don't know if it's going to get there overnight, but I think the seeds have been planted after how incredible this tournament was.
Yeah, I had so much fun watching it. And I think, too, like, it. You mentioned this bump. I'm going to throw it back to you because it was really your opinion, that there was kind of just like a fire and an excitement that was with the WBC that baseball in general could use. And it made it more fun to watch. And I think that might be what draws in newer viewers.
Yeah, there was something special about the spirit of this,
yeah.
The international spirit. And I think that's because when you come over to the States and you play in the major league, right, it's our league and it's been played a certain way for so long. That's why when you see change happen, people are in an uproar like, no, that's not the way the game's supposed to be played. Let's keep it the same. And I think the way that the players conduct themselves have, for the most part, has been the same for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you get the international game, when you get the DR out there, when you get Japan out there, you get the Czech Republic. Now you get all these cultures playing on the same field. And it's like, all right, you have to be yourself. Right. That's what makes you so special. That's what makes Mexico, Mexico. That's what makes the U.S. the U.S. because you have your culture and the way that you do things. And that's what I appreciate about international play is you get all those cultures blending. And now mm-hmm. you're playing against guys like, you know, you played against in the major leagues, but you're allowed to represent your country and not your organization. Because out here, you're representing your organization. They expect you to act
yeah.
a certain way.
Yeah.
In your country, they're like, man, the Italians, we got espresso machines in a dugout. You know what I'm saying? We're doing the little finger thing they do when they make a play. Like, it's beautiful. You know what I'm saying? It's the culture.
It's a home run.
I love it. And I just love the culture of the WBC. And before we got here, my grandma says hello to the crew. She just texted me. She's watching. Love.
Grandma
love.
You.
Grandma love. Thanks
Hi,
for
Grandma
watching.
Love.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. That's a perfect way to say it is it's a spirit that's a bit different. And just like a final note, you guys, before I quickly mention something about the regular season coming up here, there are still baseball lessons to take away, right? Like a baseball lesson that was once again cemented with this is like, you got to have great pitching. Sometimes the best pitcher is also the most important thing.
Yeah.
Baseball lesson. How about like the best squad, the most talented squad isn't always the one that wins because you've got to have cohesion and you've got to be clicking together, right? We saw the DR as a perfect example. Like what's a baseball lesson we can take away, right? Like there are plenty of those. And I really liked the DR one because, you know, if you're going to apply it to yourself or to teams here in Seattle, is Seattle putting together the best, most dominant roster? Mm. Nope. Absolutely not. Now, I don't think Seattle's going to go out and, you know, go toe-to-toe with a team that would be as talented as the DR was. But the point is that there are important baseball lessons that remained true even with international competition, even with these teams,
right.
you know, picked apart and players on different squads representing different countries. There was still just a truth to baseball that was really important to take away.
Yeah.
All right. The WBC is over. Everyone's back home. We're now 8 days away from the start of the regular season, and I'm very, very excited for it. Celebrate Mariners opening day, by the way, by joining us at our live broadcast outside the left field gates at T-Mobile Park. So on that Thursday, opening day, March 30th, we're going to be live, starting with Bump and I at 10 a.m., obviously 10 to 2, same time. And then Wyman and Bob, they're also going to be out there. They're going to take you all the way up to the pregame show at 6 p.m. So outside the left field gates, T-Mobile Park, get there early. You can check out places across the street, right?
Like Hatback
is a great place to pop in. Yeah. You could pop in there and then bring me a warm coffee because I'm going to be freezing. It's just an idea that I'm throwing out there. Just an idea.
Are they going to bring anybody else anything?
No.
Just you.
No, just Stacey.
Just me. Okay. Yeah. Just me. Okay, moving on. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, Ohio State holding their pro day today. Guess who's in attendance? Pete Carroll and John Schneider. What's the real headline?
Nobody tell Russell Wilson and Mark Rogers. Oh, wait, sorry. We're good. Woo. We're in the clear, guys. We're fine. We can talk
can
about
this.
They
want.
We can talk about it. They can do whatever they want. Pete Carroll, John Schneider at Ohio State's Pro Day. We are going to talk about this at 10:45, some of these players in particular. So, Bump, you don't have to dive too deeply into some of these names of interest. But it always is something that kind of catches your attention, right? Because they can't go to every single pro day everywhere. And you don't want to overplay your hand and show players that you're too interested in. But if you're going to make a huge decision at 5 or 20, let's say,
right,
you want to be able to see that player in person.
Yeah, you got to show up. It's more than just watching CJ throw as well. It's how he interacts with his players, the coaches, the way he walks, the way he talks. There's so many little things that you pick up on an athlete. When I was coaching, the first thing I used to do, I used to go over to the opponent's side, talk to coaches, stand there, watch some players warm up, you know, because you get a feel for who they are rather than just when, you know, you're playing quarters 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. So it's deeper than that. And he better go to, I want them to go to Alabama too. Go to Kentucky. Just make it look like, look, we are going to pick a quarterback, so then you have even more leverage going into this draft.
Yep.
They're doing what they're supposed to do right now.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number 2, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred says some adjustments to baseball's new rules will be announced in the coming days. What's the real headline?
Forget the pitch clock. We're kind of hoping the rule is the best pitchers need to participate in the WBC.
Please.
Just, hey, sorry guys. It's, you know, Rob said so. You got to do it. Really, really sorry. Team USA is not losing next time. This is from Commissioner Rob Manfred. It's included in ESPN's coverage of this. So he said this on Tuesday. On the one hand, we're prepared to make adjustments based on input, meaning input from players and the players union. On the other hand, we want to give it a chance to see how it plays out exactly over a period of adjustment in some regular season games before we make any significant alterations. Now, the pitch clock violations have dropped over the first month of spring training. That's without any rule changes, from about 2 per game to just over 1. About 25 minutes have been dropped from the average game time.
Yeah, I think you have to give these rules more of a chance. You're seeing it in spring ball. All right, let it play out for a year, in my opinion, at least, right? We saw the NFL try to do something with a passing interference, allow these guys to challenge the calls or whatnot. Didn't work out, wasn't smooth. You put more pressure on the referees. Half the times they got it wrong anyway. They say, okay, let's make things right and do without it. I think that's what you have to do here, because you never really know the effects of this until you're in a high leverage type of situation to where a run is in scoring position, 2 outs, a playoff is on the line. You got to have that type of pressure to really kind of understand what it does. But here's what I did notice. Last night's game was about 3.5 hours. And I'm watching spring. I'm so used to seeing these games about 2 hours, 30 minutes.
Good point. But you're like, what is this?
Because of the championship magnitude, I didn't mind the long game.
Can I tell you guys one other thing from the ESPN feature that I really enjoyed? Other issues addressed included, quote, new standards to be enforced for bat boys and bat girls whose ability to quickly retrieve equipment will help efforts to speed up the game. The league will evaluate the performances of bat boys and bat girls and could ask teams to replace them if their performance is considered substandard. Make them run the 40.
Little 14-year-old Johnny thought he was going to have the summer of his life, and now he's being watched on a stopwatch.
Someone with a stopwatch. Hey, let's go. Johnny, pick it up. Pick it up. Pick up those feet.
I like this. I like this because it teaches kids early. Do your job. You can't do your job. Someone else is going to do it for you. And whoever, you got guys on your team who just says, oh, but my son has always wanted to be a bad boy. But like, what's his hand eye like? Does he get his knees up when he runs?
What's his three cone?
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, put some pressure on these little kids, man.
I love that that's coach bump coming out. Like, former player bump is just coming out right now, being like, forget about the experience for kids that summer. Like, we need to know that you can pick up your feet when you run.
Got a job to do, kid.
Exactly. We don't want you. You aren't like one of the little Labrador retrievers they have in the minor leagues where it's like, look at him getting that bat. No, you got to get in there and get out.
Remember the bat? The little kid almost got ran over?
Jesse Baker's son,
right?
What?
Yeah, we don't need that. Eliminate that from the game.
Headline rewrites.
Good text from the 206 saying Stacy usually grills Curtis for asking listeners to give her burning food, and now Stacy's asking for coffee.
Correct. I live by a different set of rules. To be fair, I was asking for coffee to be brought to me outside the left field gate.
No,
there is, because you asked for food to be brought to the studio. There's a difference. I'll find it. I'll find it, and I will find it.
There's not a difference at all. But headline number 3, the Kraken survived a late comeback by the Dallas Stars, winning in overtime. Here's Adam Larson's game winner.
To get Wennberg off. Stretch pass. Larson, the big cat. Here he comes.
Yes!
He scores! Hey, hey! What do you say?
I think, was that Ed Olczyk in the background going, yes! What's the real headline?
As always, if only every game was on the road. that split is crazy. I can't wait to talk to John Forslund about that.
They're so good on the road. What is it? You know, is it less pressure? Is it you guys just come together? Whatever it is, I like it. Keep it rolling. We need more of that.
You, I just going back to it, there is a difference between asking for coffee, for a cup of coffee.
Goodness,
no, listen,
no.
To ask for a cup of coffee, for, I was jokingly asking about it, but if you were to bring one.
You already got like five offers.
It's I'm outside. I'm going to be outside in 40 degree weather. And as you guys know, I keep my house at like 74 degrees. Like I need an actual heat rock that lizards use. Like that is 40 degrees outside is freezing to me.
You're from this. That's what trips me. When I hear people from the Northwest talk about, oh my God, it's so cold. This and that. You're from this.
I've looked at lizards in cages and thought, jealous. What a life. You just lay under a heat lamp all day and eat. That's my actual
dream.
No
calories.
No.
Sit there.
Absolutely not. No. I wanna just like eat and lay under a heat lamp. And that's all. That's all I want to do at all times.
Okay.
The Seattle Kraken got a win over the Dallas Stars yesterday. Let's talk about Seattle as a playoff team. The latest on Andre Burakovsky, they need to get him back, and why the Kraken have been so good on the road. Play-by-play man John Forslund joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it's Kraken broadcaster John Forslund. John, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Question. We were just talking about it. Are you as sick and tired of the Dallas Stars as we are? We're just so tired of seeing this team. Thankfully, the last outing was a little better for Seattle. But what'd you make of their last game?
Yeah, isn't it a great feeling? Like, it's about time we start to get some angst against teams. And it's good for the fans. It's good for the building of the franchise and rivalries and all these things. And, you know, we talk about geographic rivals, and there's no question, you know, Vancouver will be that. But situations like this and maybe a budding playoff matchup, hopefully, will bring that out for years to come. So these are all positives, and the boys fought hard last night. That was a great win.
John, the Kraken, they love to make things interesting for us at times. A late goal sends it into overtime for these guys. How do we look at that? Do we say, okay, man, these guys can fight through adversity and make things happen? Or do you look at it and say, all right, man, we got to clean some things up at the end of the game and make sure we don't put ourselves in these situations?
Well, it's a great question. I think it's a combination of the two. But most importantly, I think there's randomness that's attached to hockey. And sometimes, although there are schemes and there's spacing and the coaches will game plan like they do in other sports, it gets down to a scramble. It gets down to just hacking and whacking, as I like to say, at the puck. And you know, you look at that goal last night, there easily could have been a penalty on Jamie Benn, who scored the tying goal. He cross-checked Vince Dunn. That's a push-off, and sometimes that'll be called, but with a second on the clock and a scramble like that, it's either the situation's not seen by the referee or they let the player get away with it. So it's just chaos. So I don't think there's much you can do about that. They were blocking shots for the most part. They were in position. Joey Decord was great in goal. Mm-hmm. So you just have to kind of suck it up and get after it in overtime, which they did. And they get every point now. It's cliche, but every point is going to put them in a great spot. So they get the extra point last night and move on.
Now, getting the extra point is great news. I'm hoping there's also going to be good news soon on Andre Burakovsky. Do you know the latest on him?
Yeah, I do know that he's had a tough time with this injury.
Oh, man.
And he was supposed to be back, or not back, but closer than I think it's presenting itself maybe a week ago. But there seems to be a holdup here. We don't see him a lot. I don't see him skating before practice with the regular group. Obviously, he's not with the regular group at all. So until that happens, Stacey, until he has a few practices, he gets in a contact sweater, then he's closer. And I don't think he's close right now. But maybe after this road trip, the situation will change so he continues to rehab. But he's a key piece. You take a player like that out, it adjusts the balance. It changes their scoring. It changes their four-line attack, which has been a hallmark of the team all season. But hopefully that'll turn.
Man, the Kraken are 23-9-3 on the road for 49 points. That's the most out of any team out west. What is it about the road? You know, because I'm a football guy, so we have time to plan out our trips, right? Make sure nutrition is right. We land at a certain time. With hockey, you guys travel so much. Is there something in the science of traveling, or is it just, man, these guys come together when they're on the road?
You know what? Based in Seattle, there's no science to this travel whatsoever. It's just get on the plane and go a long way and jump time zones. And these guys have done a great job working through that. I spent some time with the coaches the other night and asked them about it. You know, what's going on here? Why, at home, it seems to be a struggle. They're only a game over 500 at home. And you've got this amazing road record, which is top three in the league. So what's happening here? And they said basically there's two things. It's a simpler game on the road. I think that's true for every team. You just play a little bit more of a simple game. At home, you press. You try to put on a show for your fans. You take some risks offensively that maybe you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. So they dumb down their game, if you will, on the road. But the other thing is has a lot to do with coaching. At home, the coach gets the last change. The coach can adjust the players on the ice. The opponents or visitors put their players out first. And if he wants a certain line or a certain defense pairing against a forward line from the other side, Dave Hakstol can adjust it and put his players out there. And the coaches say on the road they don't get that luxury, so they just roll their lines. Maybe they should start rolling their lines at home because it seems like that's factoring into how they play. They have some time to figure this out before the playoffs. It's going to have to flush out by the playoffs. They're going to have to gain some traction at home if the team makes the playoffs because it's a different ball game. So you throw everything out, but you have to have some confidence at home if you want to be real in the postseason.
I want to stick with talking about coaching for just one more question here. I'm so fascinated by Dave Hakstol and kind of feel like his potential as a coach here, having struggled with Philadelphia and then obviously succeeded quite well, clearly at the collegiate level. So there was like plenty of intrigue about like, what if this kind of culture building guy can come in with an expansion team, right? How has he been in year two to you? Where have you seen him develop and what have you seen that you've liked?
Well, I think there's two things that happened to the coaching staff which have changed. And number one, Dave Lowry was brought in as an assistant. And he has a long history as an assistant and head coach in the NHL. And he brought a little levity to the coaching room. I think they needed that. The first year was filled with challenges and the losing and a lot of failed expectation. And I think it wore down the coaching staff. It wore down everybody, really. And the COVID situation and all of that. Year two, Lowry's had a little bit of life. I think that's helped. It's another voice in there. It's another opinion. That's always good. But I think the other thing that's happened here, too, is they have a new goalie coach with Steve Briere. And I think he's done an excellent job with all the goaltenders. So you kick that aside and you get the Hakstol now. Dave hasn't changed much. The thing about Dave is that he's true. He's honest. He's fair with his players. And he's really smart. And sometimes, you know, that personality is hard to draw and get it out there in front of the general public. I thought in the first year he was very guarded with the media. And I think it was hard to get to know him. And the second year, it's a little bit better. I've gotten to know him better. I think he's a perfect guy for this situation to kind of lay a foundation for an expansion team. And he's putting in culture. He's putting in a style of play. He's built an identity. That's the hardest thing for any team in any sport is to find identity. The teams that lose are just average, really don't have it. The Kraken know where their game is. It doesn't show up all the time, but they know what they're supposed to look like when they win. And that's hard to do. And you look at the improvement. I mean, this is historic. I think you have to go back to the early 70s. To see an improvement with an expansion team from year one to year two, like we've seen here. I think it was the Islanders back in 1974, if I'm correct on this, and that happened with last night's win. So this is a remarkable turnaround, but he's steady. What you see is what you get. And I think that's important because I think the team kind of takes on that identity. You look at Eberle and Larson and McCann, you go right down the list of all these players. They're very, very calculated in terms of how they play. You kind of see the same emotion or level emotion, if you will. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that's going to help younger players like Beniers learn how to play at this level. And all of it's part of the equation. And it's been fun to watch.
I want to go back to something you said. You said if this team makes the playoff, currently right now they hold a wild card spot. Is there something that you need to see during the stretch that will make you believe for sure this is a playoff team?
Well, doing away with Nashville will be good. I mean, Nashville's hanging around. They got a ways to go here. But now they have head-to-heads with Nashville tomorrow night and Saturday afternoon. You get out of here with 3 or 4 points or you win both games and you can put that one to bed and that's good. And that would basically put them in a great spot. I think they're very close. I mean, very close. I've been around long enough. Some say too long, but I've been around long enough to know that, you can't, you know, count it before it happens. So anything's possible here. And, with the road schedule and the fact that this team has a lot to do here on this road trip, you got to go to Minnesota and they're an elite team to wrap up the trip and then come home. You don't want to get ahead of it. So I think that's part of it. And then Calgary, won a game last night. They're kind of hanging around too. They don't play with a lot of jam right now. They were hammered by LA the night before. But mathematically they're in it. So until all those equations are put away, you have to be careful. But if the Kraken can just keep doing what they need to do, win the games that are ahead here, not rely on help, not rely on the final 2 weeks or week of the season to kind of squeak in, they can really feel good about where they're at right now. And they should. They're in the driver's seat here to get it done. I really believe they will. I just don't want to jinx this thing.
All right, you guys, next up for the Kraken, the Predators, that's tomorrow at 5 p.m. Like John mentioned, they're wrapping up that road trip with a game against the Wild on Monday, March 27th. If you want to get to a Kraken game, you got your first chance. It's going to be, I know some of you are going to the Mariners on that opening day on Thursday, but there's games Saturday, Monday. So make sure you go check those out, too. Just some really, really important games coming up here down the stretch. He is Kraken broadcaster John Forslund. John, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Coming up next, Pete Carroll's on a road trip. He showed up to watch Ohio State's Pro Day in person today. What's he doing out there? We'll tell you about some top prospects next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
All right, you can listen to us anytime and check back on the rest of the show if you miss it by subscribing to the Bump and Stacy podcast. That's wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, you know the drill, and we would really, really appreciate it. Honestly, like if you listen to any podcast or show and really enjoy it, it matters to everyone. So I'm not just encouraging it for us. If you listen to some random podcast on cars and you love that podcast and whoever you listen to works hard to put it together, go leave that person a review. It means a ton. It really, really helps people. We are getting some new reviews, which I'm so excited about. And they're all really nice, which I like especially. This one says, a daily listen. Thank you. 5 stars. Bump is an energetic and smart analyst. Stacy's the best host 7/10 ever had, except for her god-awful food takes. I didn't see that part when I read it earlier. Curtis should have his own show. Lots of good stuff. Everyone loves it. You guys have been awesome about leaving these reviews. We really, really appreciate it. So that's that on that. Let me get to Pete Carroll and John. Being at Ohio State's Pro Day, what are they doing there? Some names of interest to be watching. Quarterback C.J. Stroud. Most people project to go number one overall to the Carolina Panthers. Although they're still there watching him. Also watching... Also there to watch is right tackle DeJuan Jones, who's a top prospect, and top prospect wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba. If you guys remember yesterday when we talked about Mel Kiper's latest mock for ESPN, he has Anthony Richardson at number 5 to Seattle. And at number 20, he has Jaxon Smith-Njigba. So let's talk about some of these guys. You think C.J. Stroud is, like, off the table.
Ain't gonna happen. Panthers are going to grab him. I saw... It's either Thomas Davis or Davis Thomas. My bad if I'm jacking up your name, sir. Former linebacker for the Carolina Panthers said the Panthers might be looking at Anthony Richardson at the number one spot.
What?
That would be nuts if that goes down. But Stroud ain't going to be there. To me, he's the best quarterback in this draft. I think he's the best. He has a higher ceiling. I think right now, Bryce is the better quarterback. He has that pedigree. He knows what winning is like. He makes good decisions. But I look at physically, I go, CJ Stroud, I see him having just a long, nice career. So, yes, they are in, is it Columbus?
Is it? Yeah, I'm assuming
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's where
okay. All right, yes, they are in Columbus, and they will be looking at CJ, but they're looking at Njigba. And the thing about Njigba was how fast is he? I think you guys said he ran a 4.53 and a 4.5 flat. That's fast enough in his league. We saw Cooper Kupp run a 4.6. He tears his league up. There's also, I'm going to jack this guy's last name up, Luke Weipler, I think how you say his last name. He's a guard over there. You also have Zach Harrison. He's a DM. You got Paris Johnson, old tackle. You have DeJuan Jones. He's an old tackle as well. So there are other guys that they are looking at, but they are taking a strong look at CJ just in case something crazy happens and he drops. Check him out. See what his vibes are like. But and then it's deeper than just him throwing the football. I mentioned this earlier when we first started the show. It's his demeanor, how he talks to his trainers, how he deals with the public, his teammates. There's so many little things that you look at in a ball player to see, all right, how's this guy going to handle certain situations? So they're doing their homework. They're supposed to do that.
Now, I will say there is a video going around of Pete Carroll and Dan Quinn speaking with CJ Stroud. So obviously you're right. It's like you have to do your due diligence. There's four picks ahead of you, three teams that need a quarterback, and he is gonna be off the board. Yep. But you still want to be able to go check. I feel like it'd almost be hard to like talk to a quarterback, fall in love with a prospect, and know you're not going to get him. It's like window shopping in like a ritzy neighborhood. It's like, oh, I'm not going to be able to draft this guy. I don't even want to fall in love with him.
Window shopper. Man, back in the days going to the mall.
Let me tell you what.
Used to show with $20 just for food. I ain't buying no gear.
Well,
I'm window
first of
shopping.
All, $20 in the mall back in the day, not just because of the exchange rate, not just because of inflation. $20 back in the day in the mall, you felt like you were rich.
Hey.
At 13 years old, $20 was $200.
Go to Claire's, get some studs for about $6.
Done.
Woo, let's
done.
Go.
Let's, we don't think they're going CJ Stroud, but let's stick with wide receiver in general. Yesterday we talked a lot about this. I just want to be able to stick with it for a minute because they're not looking at a tackle, right? Like
no,
DeJuan Jones is there and that's important, but like you don't need a tackle. You have two rookie tackles who are really good. You do need a center. You do need to invest at some point in another guard. Do you find either in this draft? Maybe. It may not need to be at 20 though, but like Jaxon Smith-Njigba is not lasting likely out of the first round, right?
No, I don't think so. He has big playability. I think the knock on him or the question on him was how fast is he really? And here's what I think about the 40. If you have receivers who are running around the 4.5s, every now and then you get a Cooper Kupp who runs a 4.6 who does great things. If they're running in the 4.5s, they're fine. Once you start hitting 4.6s, then you start to be concerned a little bit. The rest of the stuff is just on film. How does he adjust? Does he handle press? What does he do against a corner that's aggressive at the line or that bells that turns and runs? Can he identify coverages? Those are the things that you're looking at on film. When you see him in person, it's more of a, you know, there's some players who just have that thing about them.
In person, yes.
In person. Like they just walk by you and say, there's something different about that guy.
Yes.
You're looking for that as well.
Yeah. There are definitely Seahawks players. The only team I've ever covered in person that had that where, and it won't surprise you that a lot of them were guys from that Super Bowl iteration of the defense where you were just like, this guy just has a presence that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just, people treat him differently.
Yeah.
Honestly, Cam was like that guy. Like he wasn't like a loud presence.
Chancellor. Yeah, for sure.
Like, but it was like, you just felt like he had a presence about him when he would like walk by where you were like, this dude's just different.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to throw in here is we talked about those three prospects specifically at wide receiver. But for individual workouts, there's some folks tweeting from Ohio State. And they said that for Zach Harrison, Mike Tomlin, Saints head coach Dennis Allen, and Pete Carroll were all watching his workouts in particular. So maybe another name to keep an eye on potentially is Edge, Zach Harrison. Just some names to watch. All right, you guys. I know we've talked about C.J. Stroud, but the Seahawks have been linked to a top quarterback not named C.J. Stroud. Florida's Anthony Richardson is a popular pick, but would he be a fit in Seattle? ESPN's Dan Orlovsky on whether he thinks the Hawks should go QB at 5 next.